Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Bill, and that's Wendy, and that's kind of all you really need to know. Everything else is self-explanatory. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, William.
Nice to see you.
Do you have a funky St. Patrick's Day?
No, standard. Although, I broke my streak of never having green beer. Finally had green beer.
Who twisted your arm?
We went
or
to
your shillelagh?
Okay, good to see you guys.
Did you miss me on Friday?
You embarrassed Steve. Didn't take long. That's almost a record. We were 41 seconds in and you embarrassed Steve.
To know me is to hate me, Steve.
Wendy's, oh, that's not true.
In true March Madness form, Steve, Wendy's going for the buzzer beater, trying her best to beat you, to make you embarrassed. We went to a friend's house for dinner, and they took regular... Well, I guess this is how you do it with all beer, I guess. Is you just add, here's a secret that no one's supposed
alerts.
To know.
Right.
The way they make green beer is they take beer, and they add green food coloring to it. And, of course, it doesn't change the flavor of it even a little bit. But it was good. It felt good to have green beer finally.
This was the first year I didn't have it.
Really? Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had green beer.
What?
It seems impossible to not. Like every year I go, how have I still never had green beer? This is impossible. The years I was doing stand up, I always worked in clubs that had green beer, but I'm not much of a drinker really, so I didn't want to drink it just for the sake of drinking it. I didn't want it to affect the show. And then now, I don't know. I don't go out to bars very often.
Was it a good beer, Bill?
Because it was Stella Artois.
Okay, yeah, because it has to be a really pale.
I wouldn't have put it in Stella.
So
I really only do it with Miller Lite.
Basic. Yeah.
I went to this new place I had never been before, Hop Vine Brewing Company in Aurora. It's right next to the Comedy Shrine.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Right next to it.
Yeah.
And the owner, Doug and Jan, are listeners to us. Michael had a gig, so he played, and then we left, and there was no green beer.
It's disappointing.
I mean, I guess I could have asked for it, but I don't really like it. It ruins the flavor for me.
The flavor isn't altered at all.
I know, but
it's
for some reason...
Mentally, you go, this should have more of a lime taste or a minty taste, I guess.
Ew.
I don't know, whatever's green.
I was at a bar Saturday night, too, and the bartender, we were sitting right next to on the bar, and the poor guy was totally full of green food coloring.
No.
His hands, you know, because they just dump it in.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, well, some people like it, some people don't. I go, my gosh, you ever wash your hands? I mean, the guy was
It's hard to get off food coloring.
You can't get it off.
Yes.
And he goes, well, I'm off at 6. Thank goodness it was 5:30, you know.
You know, when you do Easter eggs and stuff, it seems like it's on for a week.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It felt like in my head, it was like drinking Green River, because it's the exact same color as Green River, but then it had, you know, more bite to it, of course, because it was beer. But my streak is over.
I just picture like green beer, like you're drinking it out of a bad plastic cup standing outside, you know, around
that's
the
pretty
keg
much it.
In the rain.
Right.
And,
like the swamp water you used to have at fraternity parties.
Right, exactly.
What is that? I never went to frat parties.
It was like clear. What's
Everclear?
Everclear, and they added coloring to it, and it was always green.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. You never knew what you were drinking, if you know what I mean.
What happened to having the Blatz beer at college? That's what you have?
Or
Black Label or Red, White, and Blue. Very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, not at the frat parties. They had the green.
Not the high-end ones,
green
Wendy.
Stuff.
Mary attended the high-end frat party.
You know, I have never been to a frat party.
Not
what?
Yet.
I think I have
think
to go to
your
one.
Year.
Not too late for that.
You could be a little sister.
Oh, I don't think so. And I'm not going to be a house mom or what? Den mother. What is it called?
Den mother. They refer to them as
no, that
when
the
you go,
scouts.
Just let everybody know the den mother is here, and then just keep winking.
You should go for the frat mama. I'll be your frat mama.
Do they have that position? Because now I might be interested.
Yeah.
Are you going to wear a dress coat?
Yes. Do that, Wendy.
I could give them fashion tips. Don't wear that. Put the jersey back on.
Would you want to go to a more rambunctious school or one that was a little tamer?
Rambunctious. If I'm going...
Go big.
Yeah.
Go big.
If I'm going frat.
Yes. I'm with you all the way. I'm absolutely with you.
The frat mama is in the house.
I have really never been to a fraternity. Maybe
how is
maybe I did at ISU. I was there for just a short time.
You don't remember?
Triton College didn't have fraternities.
No?
ISU did, but I didn't last very long.
No.
There. No. Maybe that's because I went to too many frat parties and just don't remember.
You don't remember any of them. That's weird. All right. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to reestablish something that Steve did a little bit on his show toward the end. I just want to give my personal take on it. We'll get to that next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Is that your sports voice?
Yep.
I bet you get some side work with ESPN. I could see that happening.
I want to work with Dan McNeil again.
Yeah, it could happen. It could very well happen. All right. So Steve mentioned this toward the end of his show, and I wanted to bring
Steve
it
Cochran,
up.
Right?
Yeah, Steve Cochran. Okay. He's on before us. Steve Cochran did this. Hannibal Buress, a Chicago comedian who evidently is liked by some of us here at WGN, myself included, and disliked by others, yourself and Steve included. So I'm out number 2-1 in an early sampling.
May I just say, I never saw his stand-up.
Yeah.
But I see him on the Eric Andre show, which is just so silly, stupid. And I have teenage boys who love that show, and I get suckered into watching it because I can't look away. Mm-hmm. And he's really bothersome on that show.
I've never seen the show, but I've heard a bunch of his stand-up, and it's very, very inventive, very sharp, very original. His timing is impeccable. Everything I aspired to be as a stand-up, he's doing. He's like all the material you hear, it's almost unstealable, you know, because it's just so specific to him.
And super dirty.
A lot of it is.
See, you don't usually.
A lot of it is. Not all of it. I mean, some of it is, some of it isn't. But anyway, he's performing at Loyola, which is in the news a lot lately.
I know. Well, I think he was the good news jinx.
I think he was. And what happens when you do colleges is, I did stand up for 10 years, and the last year I did almost exclusively colleges. I did hardly any clubs that last year. It was almost all colleges, the last year to year and a half. And what normally happens is they give you a little tour of where you'll be performing, and then they take you in a room and they say to you, hey, there's one or two things that we'd appreciate it if you didn't mention. And then they tell you something that's happening locally or nationally that it would be better for everybody if you didn't talk about. And then what you do is you go, all right, that seems fair.
Because if you're doing the college circuit, you want another college gig, don't you?
Yeah.
So chances are you would listen to what they ask of you.
My thought process was always, they're paying me nicely. They're treating me nicely. If they're asking one small thing, hey, don't mention this. There's thousands of things to talk about. Well, why would I mention that?
They can be treating you like absolute trash. That's not the point, is that they're paying you.
Right.
Right?
Right.
This is a job where they've hired you.
Right.
So they're the bosses to say, don't mention that.
Right. 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 So one show, now normally what happens on these college shows is somebody with the college comes out and just MCs and just does a minute or two, and then it's you for an hour, essentially. Every once in a while, they'll double up. If it's a homecoming weekend or something, they'll bring in two guys, and it's a 90-minute show. So on one of these shows, it's myself and Drew Carey. So and Drew Carey wasn't really famous yet. He was in and around Cleveland. He was famous, but not nationally known, really. I don't think he had done any Tonight shows or anything yet. I don't think. Maybe one. So they brought Drew Carey and I in a room, and they go, look, we've got a problem with the assistant dean that we certainly don't want discussed because it's a very tense subject here on campus. And Drew and I just nod, and he goes, well, can you just tell me what happened? So I'm not, if somebody brings it up and they tell him, and I don't remember what it was. It was something peculiar, but he was kind of on house arrest there at the college, and they didn't want it discussed. And then one of the girls said, oh, and also, this is embarrassing, but we had a problem with one of the quads. There was a fire. She tells us this story, and she goes, please do not bring that up. Okay, like that. So we do the show. I go up. I do 30 minutes, 35 minutes, and then he goes up, and right off the bat, he goes, hey, is assistant dean, and he mentions the guy's name, and he goes, oh, of course he's not here, and then he does some joke about it. And he goes, I know one place he isn't, and he mentions the quad fire and stuff like that. And I look over at the people who hired him, and they're all just staring at each other like, why would he do that?
But I know why he did it, because it's right on the top of his mind. It's like if you bring it up.
Well, not only was it at the top of his mind, but the crowd loved it. He had only been on stage for a minute, and what it said to the audience was, wow, this guy is so tuned in to what's going on here on our campus. So it worked for him.
But this thing that I almost said Roland Buress.
No, this was Hannibal Buress.
He
Wendy.
Was funny,
this
is, too.
He is funny.
Not Roland Buress.
So the other thing, though, just reading the stories, I just want to point out, when they cut his mic, but then he went back and finished his set.
All right, that I didn't know.
Like after 15 minutes, he went back out and made several jokes about what had happened.
But what he commented on about, Catholics... There are people that attend that school that's not a quad fire. That's not like the dean getting in trouble. This is something that, might bother the Catholic
right
audience.
I'm somewhere in the middle on this. I was always one to, if I'm
Jeez,
told...
you surprise me sometimes. You had green beer, and now you're defending...
I know. Who am I? Roland, what have I become?
I gotta stop saying Roland Burris. Roland.
And Ray Burris was there, too, from the Cubs. Pitched for the Cubs in the 70s. He came out for
Hannibal
a few
minutes. Burris.
Hannibal Burris. As Steve mentioned earlier, I always felt like I'm doing this show by their rules. Like, in clubs, it was a little bit different. There was one club one time, I can't remember where it was, somewhere in the South. And I used to do, there was some jokes I did about being half Catholic and half Jewish. And the club owner said to me between shows on a Saturday, hey, let's knock off the Jewish stuff. And I go, what do you mean? And he goes, it makes people uncomfortable. Don't mention it. And I go, it's part of the I'm going to mention it. He goes, no, I don't want, that's not, the audience didn't come here to hear that. So leave that out. And then I couldn't leave it out.
That's a little different. You're talking about yourself. You're not insulting the audience and what they stand for.
Right, right.
Listen, you know me. When someone tells me not to do something,
you
I
do
will...
twice as much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stop swearing, Wendy. Really?
Beep, bloop, Thank
beep,
you.
Blah, 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 beep, beep, boop, boop.
Right. Frat mama, go home.
Oh, damn.
The crowd chanted, frat mama, go home. You're
no,
making us
that's why I'm here for an all-nighter, boys. But seriously, I get that, you know? And I also get, like, you know, when someone tells me something, sometimes it's so in the forefront of my thoughts that, like, I accidentally, well, you know what? I was told not to do this.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm a rebel. But, I mean, there are certain things, like, I wouldn't have paid him. If I was Loyola, I wouldn't have paid him.
That's tough, because then you have to go through the contract very carefully and determine if he violated any of the agreement made in a contract.
Well, if I'm getting Hannibal Burris to perform at my birthday party, I'm going to make sure that contract is, like, totally on my side.
All right.
Because, I mean, you know what you're getting, and that's what Loyola should have known, whoever booked him.
Well, that's, all right, what you just said is really the heart of this, is if you're going to any situation where somebody's performing, you kind of know, you almost always know the parameters. If you see any cutting edge stand-up comic, we talked about this when guys like Chris Rock or Louis C.K. back when he was in favor would host Saturday Night Live, and they would say something in the monologue, and then the next day on Sunday people would be going, oh, that's it. I'm done watching Saturday Night Live. Did you hear what Chris Rock or Louis C.K. said? I can't stomach that. But if you bring those guys in to do a job, you know they're going to play the line. They just are.
You have to know what you're going to get, and that's what people are texting now. Isn't it fair to say that Loyola knew Burris's material, like hiring Eddie Murphy and telling him not to say the F or N word?
Right, I agree.
Bringing in Colonel Sanders and asking not to cook the chicken.
No chicken. Right. Please, Colonel,
I
got to
tell you, I'm loving Reba as the new Colonel. Funny. She is fantastic. If you ask a comedian to come, says 708, you have to know their background. You can ask them not to touch on certain topics, but isn't that censorship? They will, in many cases, go right after that to say, you know, F you, you know how I work a crowd. Don't tell me what jokes to tell or what not to tell.
When the night that I'm talking about with Drew Carey, I had worked with him a couple of times before and always thought he was funny. But to just see a guy being told, we'd really appreciate it if you didn't mention this or this. And he was on stage for less than a minute before those were the topics, and he made them very, very funny. In a weird way, I had a new respect for him, because it's like, you don't tell an artist, you know, paint with the red brush and the green brush, but leave the blue brush away. I don't want to see anything blue on this canvas.
But again, he was poking fun of things, not necessarily the people in the audience. And Hannibal Burris was making fun of Catholicism, and that was a Catholic audience in a Catholic school. And I just feel like maybe if you did a Protestant college, he could have done that.
You know, here's what I looked for in the story and I couldn't find, is what the reaction was from the audience to that. I don't know if the audience was buying into it and saying, yeah, all right, there's a reality that we're ready to laugh at, or if they were just repulsed by it. It doesn't say it anywhere in the story, but I'm so anxious to know what they thought of it. Not just the people who hired him, not the people who decided to turn his mic off.
Right. Was it silent or groaning, or did they laugh?
I wonder, you know? And I don't even know if that should influence it, but I do know that part of that game, part of the stand-up game, is to bend the rules a little bit and say, here's the way I look at things, you know? And that's kind of what he was doing.
Was it a really funny joke? Because again, you know, it's
more is forgiven if it's funny.
Yes.
Right, I know.
Like, honestly, I know I'm the only person who doesn't like Family Guy, or one of the few, because to me, it's not funny. It's shocking and dirty and gross. And it's like, you know, if it's funny, I'll be the first person to laugh and go, oh my God, that is so funny. But it's usually just like getting the cheap, dirty way. And that's why I want to know if the joke was funny.
Right, right. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a bunch more show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. We were just telling you the story about Hannibal Buress, comedian Hannibal Buress, who performed at an event, a stand-up event at Loyola University over the weekend, but got into some topics, got into some material that he was warned not to discuss during his show. So what they did was they cut his mic off. We had a couple of questions about what exactly went down, and a listener, Paul, was there at the show, at the concert. He saw Hannibal Buress over the weekend. Thanks for being here, Paul. How are you?
Good, Bill. How you doing?
Excellent. Thanks for calling in. All right, so the first question I have is this.
Were you doing security, or were you at the show in the audience?
So I was doing security. A friend had called and said, hey, you want to make a couple bucks this weekend for Colossus 2018? And Nick Jonas had been there the night before. So that's it's a way that they show appreciation for the students. And on this night, they said that Hannibal Buress, I didn't know anything about Hannibal Buress, except that he had a bit of a mouth on him, and he, you know, he wanted to be careful with what he said, because you don't want him to incite a riot. We were all joking about it, but little did we know, it almost turned out to be that.
Paul, were you guys told by a boss, somebody higher up, we have to be very careful, it's delicate, and he sometimes goes over the line? You guys were told that?
Yeah, so we were just told that, you know, we're bringing in him, Hannibal Buress. We heard that he had a mouth on him, and we heard that he was given a rider, and then that rider had said, you know, these are the things that you do not want to say. We don't want you to say them. We're a Catholic church. We're of the faith. So please, if you can, we'd like you to avoid using, you know, certain terminologies. We'd like you to avoid talking about certain things just out of respect for the students.
Now, I see somebody tweeted something, and I just want to double check. Did he put on an overhead projector the actual memo that he got? Come on.
He actually took a screenshot of his email, and he put it on the... He showed everybody everything, the signatures, the I mean, just everything. You saw the memo. And so he went through it, Wendy, piece by piece. And he said, you know, I came up on here, and y'all didn't want me to... say this and say that. And he goes, I'm a respectable guy. But tonight, blanket.
See, you knew that was happening. And I kind of like think it's funny that he put this memo up there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just feel like he should have adhered to it.
You'd think so. But Paul, I don't know what your answer is going to be, but I think I do. The crowd loved that, didn't they?
They loved it. They all started cheering this. You know, they were all like saying, yes, yes. And you heard some people where I was standing, they were kind of like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, what about, you know, the you know, sister so-and-so and, you know, the nuns. And
right.
I don't think the nuns were there, but I
it's a good point. That,
you could hear that there was like some concern, like, uh-oh. But a lot of people were like, yeah, bring it on, you know?
You know why? You're probably at your most rebellious during those years, during your college years. So you got a room full of kids, especially now, especially in these trying times we live in, where...
They want to flip off the man.
Yeah.
Or so, the Jesus.
Yeah. So there's a guy on who's pretty famous saying, rules? I'll show you rules. I'm not playing by the rules. How an audience is going to love that.
Everyone started cheering and just feeding into it. And... As he started showing his this memo, he said, now, y'all didn't want me to use the F word on here. And, you know, but aren't you the guys that have a problem with blanking the students around here?
Oh, no.
And
that's
when everyone started cheering and like, oh, my gosh. And they cut him. They cut him. And he was like, they cut my mic. They cut my mic.
And then they played music to kind of drown him out a little bit?
Well, yeah, it was sort of a way to say to him, hey, knock it off. So when that had happened, the students were getting a little bit riled up, and everything was cool. It looks like someone had pulled him to the side to have a conversation with him.
Oh.
And then after they had spoken to him, he had came back, but he continued what he was saying, and he continued with the vulgarities. But, he kind of backed off a little bit. But it did cause quite a bit of a ruckus in there, and a lot of us were just concerned, like, okay, I mean, are these students really going to go crazy? Some of them started rocking the seats back and forth.
Jeez. The crazy Catholics.
We're like, what are you doing here? So it was at the Gentile Arena over there off of Sheridan. So it's, it was a respectable crowd, but it got a little wild when he was doing that.
We couldn't
believe it, though.
I think it's the Gentile Arena, but filled with Gentiles.
Right.
Filled with Gentiles. Yes.
Can I read the memo?
Gentiles.
Do you want to hear the memo?
What's the memo say?
It says, first of all, this is a crazy intro. Hi there.
Yeah.
That's how it starts.
We're all friends.
Hi there. Loyola University of Chicago is a Catholic university, so on the offer and contract, we stipulate content restrictions, which management has signed off on. For music and comedy, university and performance notes. Artist to perform radio edit version of songs. Content restriction. Artist cannot have content about rape, sexual assault, race, sexual orientation, gender. Artist cannot mention illegal drugs or the use of them. University requests limited use of profanities. Artists may not invite students on stage during the show. Artists may not fraternize with students on or off campus. Let me know if you have any questions. Thanks.
All right. The limited use of profanities is very gray because you can say limited by whose standards. But when they specifically say there's certain things you can't talk about, you're almost in violation of their contract.
Right.
They
so they
could
don't,
argue
they have to pay
the show
you
is null and void. Yeah.
It was one point where he actually said, where he was on the stage, and he's pointing, he goes, you can't bring up, like you just read, Wendy. He goes, we can't fraternize the students. You can't bring them up on stage. He's like, you know what? Everyone, come on up here. Come on up here. He's like, no, he goes, I'm kid. And there were students that literally started to get up, and we thought, oh, my gosh. They never came up. That what you just read is exactly what he had up on top of that screen, Wendy.
Somebody tweeted that, and it's there. They said, Loyola just cut Hannibal's mic. This is ridiculous. We want Hannibal.
Yes.
And if you paid your money to see Hannibal, you did want him. Again, it goes back to Loyola knew what they were getting into when they hired
him.
Or should have known.
They did. And it was just, I think it was like 15 or 18 bucks for the students to get in there. And if you went to see Nick Jonas the night before, they were able to get in for it was like a package deal. But I got to tell you something. If you know that this man has a mouth on, I saw him on Jimmy Fallon when he was on Vince Tonight Show.
Yeah.
I thought that bit was funny. It was hilarious. I was like, okay, this guy's funny. I agree with you. His TV presence is just dry. I don't like that at all. But they knew exactly what they were getting into when you get this guy. It's like Steve's analogy. It's like, you bring the colonel, but you don't bring the chicken. You know, it's the weird analogy, but I'll take it. But it's, but that's exactly what it was. You knew what you were getting into, so why put all these stipulations in the rider or in the contract and then expect him not to be himself? You could have found somebody totally different that could have pulled the same thing off that he did without all the profanities and all this, all this hype.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen him do is, because he does a lot of colleges, and he brings up a student newspaper from a college that he had done in the past where they review his act, and he goes,
that's good.
You can just tell this person has no sense of humor, and they kind of dissect his jokes, and it's brilliant.
That's pretty funny. Well, his stand-up, maybe I should go see him before I judge anymore.
You should go see him.
Well, do see him, Wendy, and like you said earlier, Bill, you had said that his comedy is very unique.
Yeah,
that you can't really copy off of it.
Yeah,
like you just said with the reviews is exactly what he is. Like you can't copy off that particular thing. It's very unique, and he is kind of sharp with that.
Yeah.
But overall, it was a great weekend. We all had a good time, and the students had a good time, and I think a lot of the staff took up cigarette smoking that weekend.
Paul, thanks.
Thank you very much, Paul. When I become den mother at one of the fraternities, we'll all go together to see Hannibal Buress. Right. How does that sound?
You know what's ironic about this is if you'll remember when he was on with us a year ago, we were asked by his handlers to not bring up the Bill Cosby situation, and you did.
I had to.
But
say,
that's the same. It's you're cut from the same cloth because he was told, much like you, we'd appreciate it if you not bring this up. But then you go, well, I'm going to.
Yeah, but that he could have said, you know, I don't want to talk about this. But instead, he like sighed and went silent for 30 seconds. And, you know, I just said what was in my heart. I never heard of him.
Until then.
Until.
And you didn't, he didn't say the condition of him coming on your show was that you didn't do it.
Just that they'd appreciate it, right, if we didn't bring it up.
So the condition of him signing a contract at Loyola, it sounds like, was that he wouldn't do these things.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I had to ask him because really, honest to God, I never heard of Hannibal Buress. And, you know, I'm not that plugged in, so I'm sure other people had. But yeah, until he kind of did this joke about Bill Cosby, and then that kind of started the floodgates.
It did.
Open.
All the way.
And so all that's all I asked is, you know, do you realize, you know, how do you feel about that? And I guess you explained to me off the air, he doesn't want to be the guy that.
He doesn't want to be famous for that.
Yeah, he but then why famous. Did he say it?
Well, he wasn't saying it in an attempt to make him famous. He was saying it because he was saying, here's a taboo that nobody's going to tackle. I'm going to tackle the fact that Bill Cosby is not America's favorite dad. He's got some problems.
Can I ask you, though, people had done that in the past. You know, 30 Rock made some jokes about it. It had been going on in the inner circles of comedy because you were sort of aware of this.
Yeah.
Why did it take Hannibal Buress, of all people, to break this wide open?
I don't know.
That's wild.
The timing was just right, I guess. I don't know. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. So stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Did you see any of the tweets and texts from Donald Trump Jr. over the weekend?
Yeah, he is not having marital bliss, is he?
No. His wife has...
Vanessa? I shouldn't even know her name.
It is Vanessa, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it is, right?
I shouldn't know her name. I shouldn't even care that he's having marital troubles.
Yeah. He's having all that. Well, there's a woman named Melissa Stretton who is a model who has come forth with... because I'm not on Twitter...
What?
I'm not familiar with how this works. I was always under the belief that on Twitter, if you post something on Twitter that goes to everybody... But is there an option where you can just send it to a specific person?
Well, you can private message someone.
All right. So that must be what these are, I would imagine. I can't imagine him doing this to everybody.
It does go out to everybody. So if you click on their Twitter page, you will be able to read it unless it was sent as a private message.
Oh.
If you follow the person, then it will come up on your board, kind of like Facebook.
Okay. Well, apparently years ago, all the way back in 2011, during the month of 2011... Donald Trump Jr. began sending this woman messages, many of them sexual in nature, or at least, if not sexual in nature, near that.
And this was on Twitter? Because then these were private messages, I'm sure. Or
messages.
He's dumb.
Maybe. But here's the weird... all right. When you're dealing with the Trump family, almost any part of it is weird. But here's the weird part as far as I'm concerned with these messages he was sending the model. Many of them were slightly sexual in nature, but nearly all of them contained some reference to bacon. Does that seem odd to you at
yes.
all?
Yes.
I'm not saying that bacon can't be exciting, because it can be and often is.
Sometimes you need a little sizzle.
You need a little sizzle. Steve just said exactly what I was struggling to find the right words for. Sometimes you need a little sizzle.
Unless you're a vegetarian, I would find it safe to say 99.9% people love bacon.
Yeah, bacon's good. Don't get me wrong.
Bacon is love.
We've all run into bacon.
But I think the weirdness is some of us have an easier time than Donald Trump Jr. in separating those two wonderful things. Sex is great, bacon's great, but I hardly ever think of them together. But if you read these notes from Donald Trump Jr., he oftentimes thinks of them together. Nearly all of his references to anything, even a little bit sexual, have some degree of bacon mention within them. And I don't know why that would be. I'm trying to think if I've ever once equated the two, and I don't know that I have, but Donald Trump Jr. on an almost constant basis when trying to woo this woman, and he was married at the time, but he constantly, in an effort to get her excited or get himself excited, mentions bacon. I don't know why.
Do you have examples?
Yeah, I got a bunch of examples.
Is he a stockholder in Hormel or Oscar Mayer?
Donald Trump tweets. Now, again, these are years ago. He was still a grown man, but this was 2011. This was 6.5 years ago, November 20th of 2011. Here's what he writes. Does anyone else have a bacon fetish? ? It sounds so wrong, but tastes so right.
I would like that tweet. I would hit like.
So she tweets something and he writes to her, stop that. I am a happily married man. I'm soaking my body in bacon today.
All right, that's weird.
They're all.
How do you soak your body in bacon?
I don't know.
Bacon grease? Yes. You can't soak your body in bacon. You can wrap your body in bacon because I've done it.
Yes. Also in November.
Here comes the frat mama.
Yeah, I was thinking as I said that out loud because I have no filter that you have to put it on you before it's cooked and then you lay out in the sun.
Right.
And go to a pool party and there you go. Boy, I'm going to make the best.
Yeah, you make a great frat mama. I still remember when I was a kid, there was a Chevy in front of us. We were driving somewhere, and it was two pigs enjoying each other's company.
I know where you're going.
And it said making bacon, and I didn't understand that. I'm like, I don't...
How old were you?
26. I was in my mid-20s. It needed to be... Both of my parents had to delicately explain to me why that was funny, because I was a very little kid. Making bacon, why? I don't understand.
That's what we do in the morning, honey, when we're also making eggs.
Yeah, you make bacon, and everyone's happy. But Donald Trump Jr. was still buying into that well into his late 20s, early 30s. Like, when most of us put that aside, he was just revving up. Oh, bacon, hot. Hot, sizzling. Mmm. So you can find these almost anywhere online. There were several news sources that printed these weird tweets, and some of them are just plain sick. I mean, I read you the cleaner ones, but there's a bunch that you just go, okay, DJ Jr., easy, easy. DT Jr. All right, let's do this. A quick break, some news, and then there's a lot more show.
Carry on, my wayward son.
We will.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I need to apologize. I may have stalked a puppy over the weekend.
To what end?
To the kind of Glenn Close-like and Fatal Attraction, but not hurting the animal.
You have puppy envy right now, don't you?
You know what? I do. Mm-hmm. I've talked to Steve Dale about this. And
he's your grief counselor.
He is, as is my sister. I'm ready to look for a new dog, and I want to do a rescue dog because I don't want to. If I could adopt 5 dogs, I would, because it breaks my heart going on the internet and looking at puppies that need a home.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They don't pull at your heartstrings, but they do at mine.
Yeah.
And some listener actually texted me and said, check out this place called Rescue Warriors Corp. Or do you say core? Which you probably do, but I'm just saying it for website purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I looked at Rescue Warriors Corp and .com or .org or whatever their website is, and I found the puppy of my dreams that was taken from, I believe, a puppy mill and brought to them, and they were fostering it and getting it ready to be adopted, and I saw it and I fell in love and I showed my kids this, and then I filled out the application online where they asked for all my essential information. And I said, is he available? And I emailed him, and they said, we have somebody coming to meet and greet him on Sunday. So between Thursday and Sunday, I must have emailed them 5 times.
Saying what?
Hey, are those people still coming on Sunday? Because if not, am I next in line?
Uh-huh.
Hey, guys, sorry to bug you. I filled out the application, so if it doesn't work out for this family on Sunday, really interested.
So just showing that you were interested.
That's... Yeah, but then I took it too far. Hey, guys, here's a picture of my tiki that I lost last week, and this dog looks so much like my tiki that I'd really love to have it. Let me know.
Now,
I did a couple more, and I said,
"That might be too much."
Listen, I know I'm a pain, but if it doesn't work out on Sunday, could you please let me know? Because I'd like to come and visit this dog as well. And I don't want to say the name of the dog because they did adopt the dog, and I
you think the dog is listening, and you don't want
to? No, but I think the people who adopted the dog are listening, and they looked so happy in the picture. And I wish everybody well, but I just that was the only dog I wanted. So now my life is empty.
I'm not positive that part's true. I think there might be another dog out there somewhere for you. But forgive me for being naive, but I am. You know how like a lot of people won't order clothes online because they have to try the clothes on? Wouldn't you want to do that with a pet?
Well, I mean, that's why you go meet the pet. Like you look online and it's just killing me, all the information. You know, I don't need a purebred dog, but Tiki was a part Australian Shepherd, we think Bernese Mountain Dog and Husky. So he had this certain look, and I don't want to get, you know, Tiki too, like Santa's Little Helper. They kept getting the same dog.
Don't do that.
But I did like his look, so I'm looking for a look similar. You know, it doesn't have to be like exactly the same color, but I liked that look. He had unique hair where he hardly shed. So I'm looking for a particular look. So then you look online,
but won't you,
you go visit the dog.
If the dog looks too much like your old dog, won't you slip at some point and call? You won't. You would. Are you sure?
Yeah, Tiki's gone. I mean, people who get remarried after their husbands die or wives die, do they call them the name?
No, I guarantee you people have done that, that it's a second or third marriage and they just by habit go with the first name, you know, the name of their first wife or husband. I would just be so afraid. There'd be too many times where out of the corner of your eye, you would see a dog coming at you and you would just not put it together and call him by your old dog's name.
No, I was able to put that past me. My last email, you know, just said, you know, I noticed he's not on the website anymore. I'm assuming he's been adopted.
Wow. What email number was this? Did you start getting emails bouncing back to you for no reason?
No,
it's weird. They've gone out of business. I wonder what happened.
I'll bet that this was the next family, but they just said, we can't give the dog to this woman because she's a psycho.
Right.
But I wasn't being psycho. I just really, really, really wanted this dog.
How many messages within a 24-hour span?
Within 4 days, probably six, maybe seven. But the last one just said, you know, I assume he's been adopted because I notice he's off the website. And then they just did a quick, yep, he's been adopted.
They didn't use the word duh. You didn't just get a quick email back. Well, that's odd. I sent him a long letter. I just get three letters back. D-U-H. Interesting.
I just feel sorry. So I just think that this is a great little corporation. It's rescuewarriorscorp.org. I know it's probably pronounced core, but for website purposes, they're just animal lovers that have other jobs, but they foster and put together and take care of dogs and adopt them. They want to single-handedly try and help every homeless pet get a home.
If you'll remember a week and a half ago when you lost your dog, you and I discussed this a short time afterwards, and I said, how soon will you get another one? And all indications seem to be down the road a piece, not so soon, but now you've changed your mind.
Well, our house is very empty. Yeah. And I'm ready to fill it up with puppy paws.
If you ever hear me say that sentence, call 911.
I will take you.
I totally lost my mind.
I'm not even calling. I'll just take you to the hospital.
Please, just take me in because something's malfunctioned.
I have executive green carpet cleaning coming out today to clean the carpet, so it couldn't have happened before today anyway.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, it wasn't meant to be is what I'm trying to explain to everybody in my family.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a jerk dog and I wasn't supposed to have him.
Oh. That's the right way to look at it.
I just don't know. But I know there are animals out there. And I just have to tell you that, you know, I've Googled Australian Shepherd mixes. I kind of now want to see if there's a puppy, even though we got Tiki when he was 2 years old. I'm just kind of looking out there. And then it's so weird because if you look on Facebook, it's like puppies for sale. So you see the pictures and you reach out. And I'm kind of sick to my stomach because these people responded to me and said, we have some puppies. Where are you located? And I said, Illinois. And they said, well, we're in Oklahoma, but if you can't come get the dog, we'll ship it to you.
Would you go all the way to Oklahoma to get
a
dog?
No, because there are plenty of dogs that need rescuing here.
Plus, the dog would bark with an accent. You want a Midwest dog.
Because that would be a slow, like, bow, wow. Yeah.
That's how dogs bark in Oklahoma. Yeah, or else they're singing Rodgers and Hammerstein songs. Do you want that all
yeah,
night
that
long?
I would like.
You wouldn't be able to sleep.
I'd be a YouTube sensation if that happened.
There's got to be places.
There is, and I am. But can I just tell you, what bothered me more than anything in the world is when I reached out to these people and they said, oh, yeah, we're in Oklahoma, but we can arrange a delivery. And I said, I don't want you shipping a puppy, so no thanks. No. And then just a quick little, okay. Like, no,
they do that?
You don't ship a puppy.
That
certainly
like
not
that
on
much.
United Airlines.
No. No.
So no. I'm just looking for that look. It doesn't have to be a purebred, but, you know, like when you pick out a boyfriend for your first time or second or fifth time, you mm-hmm. have a look that you're looking for, and
right.
I'm looking for an Australian Shepherd look. It doesn't have to be one.
With a mullet.
I would like to give him a mullet, if yeah. that's possible. Right. But so I just want to apologize for, you know, and then
for
I thought...
bombarding them?
Yeah, and then I thought maybe the people who adopted it listened to us, and then I felt foolish, so I just... I just wanted to apologize. I just, you know, I've not had to do this.
Right, in a long time.
Right, and we adopted Tiki from a neighbor who was walking by who said they found him and didn't really want him.
I hope you are using Steve Dale as a resource, I hope.
Yeah, and my sister is connected. A retired attorney who works for PetSmart, and they have a bunch of different adoption services.
Oh, sure, all right.
I just want to give a dog a home, not a bone. You thought I was going to say
I thought you would go bone. All right, home.
But it makes me sad because... I got to tell you, it's like you're looking at all these people. Well, they're not people. They're looking at all these dogs.
Get that dog with the face like a human that was in the news.
I don't want that.
That
would scare me.
That dog was great.
Because I like sleeping with my dogs.
If
I woke up next to who's that? But it's so sad to look at all these dogs that need homes.
Of course.
Because it's like, then I feel bad getting what I want, the look that I want, because there are other dogs.
Right.
I just feel bad for all of them.
I get it.
I'm going to be a dog lady.
Yeah.
Not a frat
mama. No.
I'm going to be
lady.
A doggy
That's
mama.
Coming. All right. We'll take a quick break. If you're a dog that needs a home, call Wendy at home. We'll give that number out next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Have you been? I know you're not the biggest college basketball fan, but have you at least been swept up in some of this Loyola fever?
I have, yes. That's been excited.
Exciting.
Very exciting.
Did you watch the game on Saturday? You didn't see it, but you heard.
I heard.
What a game. What an exciting game.
Explain to me the highlights.
Well, the highlights are it's a team that no one really expected to even make this, you know, this tournament, not even be a participant in it, and they won round one in a very exciting fashion.
Are they that good? Or you don't want to answer?
I don't know that it's a fluke. They must be that good. Can I tell you what they do better than any team I've ever seen, certainly at the college level and possibly even in the pros? They pass fantastically. They just nonstop, as soon as one of them has the ball, a third of a second later, it's being shuttled to another player, and a third of a second later, he throws it somewhere else, and they're flawless at it. Like, usually when you pass that much... it doesn't work because
somebody
somebody jumps in and goes, oh, they're passing a lot.
That's a good team.
Interrupt this.
But you know what that shows?
Passing and passing.
Teamwork.
It's teamwork. That's what it is. It's teamwork.
And, you know, if you can't penetrate all the passing, then you have an advantage because they don't know where the shot's going to come
from. That's right.
Good for them.
They're very even in that respect. Like, a lot of teams have one or maybe two go-to guys, and the Ramblers don't seem to have that. They just give it to anybody, and then it's miraculous. They just shoot, and it goes in. And having Sister Jean on your side...
Yeah, explain her deal. I know you had her on the show
on
Friday.
She was on
Friday
when you weren't here. She said, I'll only come on when Wendy's off. I go, well, Friday then. So she
came
on.
You have a lot of guests that request that.
What's a lot?
Over two?
There's a lot. Yeah, then there's a lot. Yeah. So Sister Jean is like...
Is she a coach?
She is not a coach.
Fan?
Super fan. 98 years old.
Is she affiliated with the school?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what her title was. I thought it said... Team chaplain? Yeah, team chaplain.
Oh, God love her.
Which was Charlie Chaplin's race car team back when he was in Funny Cars.
Look out for the lightning bolt!
She comes on and
Cannibal Burris lover.
She's so sharp. And she really, like, it's not just somebody who enjoys, I mean, she lives this team. She just, you know, and they keep showing her. And if I was the other team, I'm like, we got to find ourselves right. Some. We have to get our version of a Sister Jean. We got to immediately find somebody.
I've
like
seen her
that.
All over the news.
Oh,
I did not hear the
network coverage everywhere over the weekend. She was on TV more often than I don't know anyone who got more TV coverage over the weekend than her.
And if listeners, if you like me, did not hear the interview that Bill and Harry Tynowitz did, then go to our WGNRadio.com and you can find the podcast of it, because that's what I'm going to do.
But
it's on Facebook too.
She'll talk to the guys before, during, or after the game and explain to them, you know, exactly what needs to be done. I mean, she's not messing around. She wants this team to go all the way. It means the world to her.
I loved seeing these ginormous basketball players come up and hug her in her wheelchair. Yeah. And she, I mean, it's just, it was a beautiful moment. She's patting them on the back. They're really like feeling like,
that she's part of it.
Yes.
That she's connected. All right. So one of the guys on the team, I think it was this guy Custer, who made the last shot. Custer's last shot, ironically. He's the guy who threw the ball in with 3.7 seconds left. A shot that should not have gone in the net, and then it
did. Divine intervention?
I'm watching the shot going, oh, that's too bad. Oh, it went in. It didn't seem like it was going to, and it bounced weird and went in. All right, so after the game, each of the players comes up, and they get either a handshake or a hug from Sister Jean. And then a little bit of time elapses, because this guy's doing a little bit of press, and then he says something that I don't understand. He goes, I'm going to prove you wrong, or we're going to prove you wrong. It might have been, we're going to prove you wrong. And then I go, oh, what is that all about? What does that mean exactly? I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Because she's their biggest supporter. She wants them to go all the way. So I don't know what exactly he was referring to. But he goes, yeah, we're gonna prove you wrong. And then everybody smiled and laughed, and he went his way and she went hers.
That they're going to lose.
It would almost lead you to believe that she had said at some point, you know, this might be the end of the line, so enjoy words to that effect.
She wouldn't have done that.
I don't think she would have. She's in it to win it. She wants to go all the way.
She's in it
to win it. She's got a lot of money down on that team, I think.
No, she does not.
You don't think she did?
Don't.
I think she threw some money down.
Don't say that.
I'd respect her even.
No,
I don't think I could respect
would,
her more.
But no one else
but
would.
But I like the image of a 98-year-old nun calling Caesar's Palace going, put 5 large down on the Ramblers and just hanging up. I like that picture.
I like the Ramblers because we had an AMC Rambler.
Oh, well, that's
when
good,
I was growing up.
That's a good reason.
It was like
was it maroon and yellow?
No, it was like a mint green.
Yikes!
The Rambler was American Motors, I believe it was, and then we also had not a Pacer, but we had a Hornet wagon, which was taxicab yellow with wood paneling on it. We
Did
had
your dad
classic
blindfold
cars.
Himself when he went car shopping?
No, he was dead after. He was dead when we purchased that one, and if not, that would have done him in. Yeah,
that would have done him in.
Taxi color yellow.
My wife Terry went to Loyola. She graduated from Loyola,
really?
And she said, because she's very excited about all this, but she sees the team colors and she goes, "They might want to look at some different color options because maroon and yellow aren't normally."
Okay with that.
It takes some getting used to. The eye sometimes isn't ready for it. You almost have to, 30 minutes before the game, you almost have to hold a maroon and a yellow crayon up and just kind of slowly.
I rather like it. Everybody in the world has like blue and white and blue and yellow.
It's a little different.
I kind of like it.
Yeah. All right. Well, nothing but good luck to the Loyola Ramblers. We would love to see you continue to win.
Oh, do we know real quickly here? Do you know?
Somebody knows?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. I think I know the answer, and I think I read this somewhere that Sister Jean had Loyola in her bracket going to the Sweet 16, but then had them losing after that.
Oh. So Custer was calling her out saying, I know you thought we'd get this far, but I'm going to prove you wrong. We're going to go even farther.
I think so, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. That makes a lot of sense. Well, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Okay. No problem.
Have a great
Thank
week.
Thank you.
All right.
There you go.
Now I know the rest of the story.
Thank God for the listeners, because we don't. This is the most ill-informed show ever.
Far and away. Far and away. All right, a quick break and then more show, more ill-informed show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We'll prove you right on that one.
Yes.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. Sing the praises of Zorn.
Herod Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Wendy, you were just privy to a conversation that usually guys just have on their own, a sports conversation. And I said, there's a guy on the team that Loyola played the other day, Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
And I thought his name was Admiral Stockdale, but it's not. It's Admiral Schofield. His first name is Admiral. His last name is Schofield.
Admiral Stockdale. He was the guy who said, who am I and why am I here at the debate?
That was him.
Ross Perot's running mate.
Yeah.
He was terrific.
Yeah, he was great.
And he had an inside game, too. But boy, this guy, Admiral, what was his name? Schofield?
Admiral Schofield.
That guy was a beast.
Don't you think when you name your child something like that, there's a lot of pressure on him? Because he sounds like he was a military leader decades ago.
It is such a great first name.
I love it.
Admiral.
He should change his name, Eric. It should be Admiral Zorn, and then it would be perfect with the theme song.
You're right.
He should hang out with Sergeant Shriver.
Right. And there's the character in Prairie Home Companion, Senator Torvaldsen.
Yeah, all those guys should pal around together. Tomorrow is a pretty big day in the world of politics here in Chicago.
Very exciting stuff going on. And to me, the most interesting thing lately has been this back and forth with Jeannie Ives, who's one of the Republican candidates for governor, running to the right of incumbent Governor Bruce Rauner.
The far, far right of...
The far, far right of him, yes. And so one of the things that Rauner has done, and I wrote a column about this recently, he has made these campaign commercials where he tries to make Jeannie Ives look like she's pals with Mike Madigan. And it's just, it is such an appalling
where she's defending
charge.
Him, right?
Well, the commercial is based on something that Jeannie Ives said during the debate here at the Tribune Tower. Mm-hmm. It's the only time the two of them have appeared together. And Rauner's carrying on about Mike Madigan's a crook. And Jeannie Ives says something like, well, here, there you go again, picking on Mike Madigan.
Yeah.
Her contention is that the reason we've seen 3.5 years of failure from Governor Rauner to get anything done, he's 0-44 on his turnaround agenda, is that all he knows how to do is pick fights with Mike Madigan. He calls him names, he calls him a crook, he says he's corrupt, and then he wonders why he can't make any deals, why Madigan is so stubborn. And so Jeannie Ives thinks, I know how to work with people. Mm-hmm. And that was her take. And she's then she also said that she doesn't think that she could immediately roll back the tax increase that Madigan and the Democrats, along with some Republicans, pushed through last summer. Mm-hmm. And so she thinks that it can't be done immediately. Well, this to Rauner becomes that she's in favor of the tax hike, and he says that he can repeal it. Well, he just released a budget document where he proposes eliminating only like a little bit of it, like 25% of it, and only then if he gets some bank shot agreement from the suburbs to pay for their own teacher pension. So Rauner has no credibility on this at all, and for him to say that Jeannie Ives is in league with Mike Madigan is just the biggest lie of the campaign season. Anyway, so it gets better because the Democratic Governors Association decided they were going to get involved in this primary. They put out two ads over the weekend. They put $500,000 behind them. One of them is just a straight out attack on Governor Rauner for not getting anything done. And the other one looks like an attack on Jeannie Ives. It is framed as an attack on Jeannie Ives. Jasmine, do you have the audio from that first ad that ran?
Oh, let's hear that. All right.
It turns out Bruce Rauner is the Democrat Governor Association's favorite fake Republican. Rauner and his Democrat friends are attacking Jeannie Ives for being conservative. They don't like that Ives voted against the sanctuary state law Rauner signed. They don't like that Ives voted against taxpayer funding of abortion that Rauner signed. They don't like that Ives voted against the Chicago Public School bailout that Rauner signed. They don't like that Ives has been endorsed by National Review, the leading conservative journal in America. Fake Republican Rauner and his Democrat friends don't like Jeannie Ives, which is why you should.
Now, this is actually the second ad that ran, but when she says Governor Rauner and his Democratic friends, that's from Jeannie Ives. Now, that's a complete lie, too. I mean, this is the idea that Rauner and Madigan are somehow friends is completely false. But that ad is a response to the other ad that do we have the audio from that also?
Yes.
I sent her two. Can we play that one? Because I think that one, that's the one that ran first.
This is the first one.
The first one, yeah.
When is a conservative leader too conservative for Illinois? Meet Jeannie Ives. She's been rated as one of the most conservative in the state. Ives wants to ban abortions. She has an A rating from the NRA, pushing to arm teachers and stop new gun laws. And on immigration, Ives marches in lockstep with President Trump, trying to eliminate protections for undocumented immigrants. Tell Jeannie Ives, her conservative policies are just too conservative for Illinois.
Okay, now that's the first ad that ran, and that's from the Democratic Governors Association. Mm-hmm. You got to remember that Democrats would hear that and they would think, well, I'm never going to vote for Jeannie Ives. But Democrats are not voting for or against Jeannie Ives on Tuesday.
Right.
Tuesday it's a primary.
Right.
And you pick, you know, your Republican ballot, a Democratic ballot. This ad is, you know, ostensibly attacking Jeannie Ives, but if you watch it, first of all, the pictures of Jeannie Ives are actually pleasant looking. And generally, attack ads, they take the black and
white, the ugliest,
with the bad expression. Yep. And the tone of voice is fairly mild, too. It's not one of those like, Jeannie Ives,
right.
How dare she draw breath in right. our society yeah. after all the things she's done. Another couple things to notice about that ad, again, is when they talk about abortion.
Okay, yes.
If a Democrat is actually trying to, you know, gather support for a position in favor of reproductive choice, they will talk about choice. They'll talk about women's rights. They don't use the word abortion in their ads for their candidates. Another thing to listen to is when they talk about gun laws. This wording is designed to appeal to conservative voters.
Yeah.
The Democrats want Jeannie Ives to beat Bruce Rauner. And Rauner knows this. Rauner has been raising a stink about this ad
because
all weekend.
She would, if everything goes according to plan, be easier to beat.
Well, this is a long tradition. And if you remember Alan Keyes,
yeah.
when they brought in Alan Keyes to run yeah. against Barack Obama, I mean, he's like a far right nut job, basically, and he got clobbered.
Yeah.
There was also Al Salvi, who ran for Senate, who was pretty far right. He got clobbered. Jim Oberweis ran for Senate on the far right. He got clobbered pretty much across the board. If you are a far right candidate in Illinois is a fairly purple to blue state.
Yeah.
And you run someone who is that far to the right. And Jeannie Ives has stuff in her background. If you remember the ad that she ran attacking
the transgender
with a man in a dress and
yeah.
so on. And she just the other day, she I think on this radio station, actually, gave an interview with Cochran, I think, where she was saying that some transgender people are predators, and she was like trying to draw this whole social conservative stuff in really down far right, where she's going to be very hard to elect.
She said that on the air?
I believe she did. Yeah, I didn't hear it, but I heard about it. So we can.
Interesting.
This could be fake news. I don't think so, though. I mean, it is of a piece with her. I mean, she's a unapologetic far right conservative. And I respect her for being that.
You know what you're going to get with her.
You know what you're going to get with her, but I think the Democrats really believe that she's going to be easy to beat for whoever is nominated.
But don't you think, Eric, that world has been shaken? Like, there was a time where strategically you'd say, I hope we're up against the easiest person to beat, but after what happened with the presidential election last time, I wonder if those rules are out the window.
Well, you're exactly right, Bill, and that's what I concluded my column on this on Sunday by saying, be careful what you wish for, because
yeah.
I was one of the people in 2015 and 2016 who was saying, like, Donald Trump, excellent.
Yeah.
The Republicans are going to nominate Donald Trump. He's going to be so easy to
right.
beat. He's got so many flaws. He
yeah.
said so many ridiculous things. No way could he win the election, and that would grease the way for someone whose views are more in line with my own.
Right.
That turned out to be, not that my rooting interest played any role in this, but just that sense of, like, yeah, this would be great if he were nominated, the most extreme candidate. It's possible.
Yeah.
The way things go, that if you nominate someone who's on the far right and the voters are energized and they get out to the polls, and this is what we're really looking at tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
We are looking at whether I don't know any Republicans. I should say this off the top of my head. I don't know any Republicans who are really enthusiastic about Bruce Rauner and really think, yeah, this guy, he's got a lot done because he ain't got anything done.
Yeah.
They see him as a check on the Democrats, on Mike Madigan, and that's how he's run his entire campaign. So far, he's run against J.B. Pritzker, saying Pritzker is a friend of Madigan's. Now he's going after Jeannie Ives, saying she's a friend of Madigan's. It's Rauner is, you know, noun, verb, Mike Madigan. That's what how he is running.
Right.
I know that Republicans are enthusiastic about beating Mike Madigan. I don't know very many Republican voters who are enthusiastic about Rauner. I've heard from a number of Republicans who are enthusiastic about Jeannie Ives.
Interesting.
Because she is someone who speaks to those base voters.
Yeah.
I heard from a woman yesterday who said, you know, why did you write this? Because conservative voters already know about Jeannie Ives. And I wrote back and said, I don't think that a lot of them do. I think, you know, I'm a political geek, and it seems like you are too. But honestly, a lot of people are just tuning into this. I mean, they're just finding out who these candidates are. And so there are people, and there are people downstate. The early polls show Jeannie Ives had, like, no name recognition at all.
Right.
So people are starting to come around to this, and the idea that the Democratic Governors Association is meddling in this election and drawing attention, doing this ad where they're saying like gun laws, and the Republicans are going, yeah, that sounds good to me. You know, she's in lockstep with Donald Trump on undocumented immigrants, however they put it. That's something that's designed to appeal to Republican voters.
Right, sure.
And so what they're trying to do is get that name recognition up. Jeannie Ives' campaign has spent, I think, $3 million for me. This is another $500,000 basically spent on behalf of Jeannie Ives. And Rauner's making this case like this ought to be an in-kind contribution to Jeannie Ives, even though the ad never says she's a good candidate. It is a great political dirty trick.
All right, more of this discussion next. It's a big day, a big election day tomorrow. Eric Zorn is here from the Tribune. We'll come back and discuss this further. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about the primaries tomorrow. One thing I think you'll have to agree with me, it's fun to say Fritz Kagi, isn't it?
It's fun to say Fritz Kagi.
I like saying Fritz Kagi.
I'm thinking he's going to win.
I really think he is.
And the reason is that...
This is for
county assessor running against Joe Berrios, who's been there for two terms. And there's been these recent reports from ProPublica Illinois and the Tribune and also several independent reports that the assessment process in Cook County is all screwed up.
Yeah,
and
because of Joe Berrios?
And it's hurt. Well, he hasn't fixed the system. Yeah. The argument could be that this has been screwed up for a long time.
Yeah.
He's had 8 years. It's still really screwed up, and it's hurting low-income people more than high-income people. And so he's got a lot of friends and family on the county payroll, and Kagi is definitely an outsider coming in. And
let's have a Kagi party. That's what I say.
Kagi
stands. Throw a Kagi.
We'll do Kagi stands.
Yes.
So. And people are saying, well, but Berrios is backed by the party. And that means a lot in a primary. Turnout is not all that high in primaries.
Yeah.
And so if you have people walking the streets, knocking on doors for you, you can generally pull a pretty good turnout. But I'm thinking back 2 years ago when Anita Alvarez was the county state's attorney, and she was under a lot of fire. Kim Fox was running against her in the primary and had the same kind of coalition behind her, a lot of progressives, a lot of people who really were interested in change. And if you remember, Kim Fox just clobbered Alvarez. I mean, really, really beat her badly. So I think we're in a different era in Cook County politics right now and in Chicago politics, where the support of the insiders, the organizations, the unions, and so on, is not what it used to be. So it's not a foregone conclusion.
Isn't that surprising?
Well, I don't know if it's so surprising. I think that there's a certain independence in voters. I think social media has played a big role in this.
Yeah.
The Tribune has attacked Berrios relentlessly, and it's sort of a bipartisan thing. I mean, everyone from me to Cass, everyone, we're all jumping on this
but
bandwagon.
Let's say you were getting attacked regularly from a major newspaper like the Tribune. Wouldn't you say to yourself, well, I guess the best way to do it is to really do the job that I was hired for, to try harder and make it better. That doesn't seem to have happened, does it?
Well, in fairness, I don't know if I want to say in fairness, but these reports all just came out last year.
Yeah.
And the most recent reports have just come out this year, confirming the reports from last year. So it's not like he's had a whole bunch of years with these reports in his face, but the argument would be that he knew about this. He had to know about this.
Right.
This is his job. The only job of an assessor is to feel he doesn't set the property tax rates, right? If your property taxes are high or low where you live, that's not Joe Berrios' fault.
Yeah.
He's the guy whose job it is to determine what your house is worth, what your business is worth, what this property is worth. And then they take that the total levy, the amount of money that the governing bodies want, and they divide the pie up, and your share of the pie is determined by the assessment. So that's not the fact that property taxes are high is
not
Berrios'
fault. But a
lot
of times they do it by driving past your house.
Well, they do it. I mean, it's a very strange situation because they have this where they do the assessment.
But they don't even go inside sometimes.
Oh, they don't
drive
past
your house.
They don't go inside. They're looking for comparable properties. It's a kind of haphazard situation. And then they brag that, well, you can always go and appeal your taxes, and some incredibly high percentage of appeals are upheld.
Yeah.
We do it every year, and it is...
They'll lower your assessment. So what's going on here? They should be more... When they look at it again, they should say, "Well, we had it right the first time." They should get it right more often the first time. You would think.
Yeah.
So that's a race that a lot of people are
Fritz Kagi will fix all that.
Fritz Kagi says he's going to fix all that. We'll see. I mean, this happens. You know, people will come in and say, I'm going to be the reformer. I'm the voice of change. And then they get in the office and go, it's not as easy as I thought to change things. Happens all the time.
We only have a minute, but the biggest one to watch
The biggest one to watch is the 3rd Congressional District. It's incumbent Dan Lipinski, Democrat, running against Democrat Marie
Newman.
That's
my district.
It's Wendy's district. And essentially the
and Krista McQuarrie's, I believe.
It may be.
It's suburbs and part of Chicago.
Yeah, but it's south-southwest.
Uh-huh.
And Lipinski's been around since 2004 when his father just decided to back out after the primary and mm-hmm. got the party to put his son in office.
Mm-hmm. Who could we put in my place?
Hmm, would be good. Let's look around the dinner table. And anyway, just real quickly, he's a very conservative Democrat. He's anti-abortion. He did not support Barack Obama's re-election. He did not support Obamacare. Marie Newman is running as a very progressive Democrat. And this is seen... nationally, this is seen as a question of where is the Democratic Party? Is it with the sort of moderate to conservative Democrats like Lamb, who won in the Pennsylvania special election last week, mm-hmm. or is it with the more progressive, you know, the Bernie Sanders end of the party where Marie Newman is? It's an imperfect analogy here, but it's the one that I think when you turn on MSNBC, CNN, Fox News tomorrow night, that's the race they're going to be talking about, not our governor's race.
Right. Eric, thank you.
Going to
big
be
day
really
tomorrow. That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Read him there. Wendy and I are headed toward the stream in just a few moments. You can join us there. We'd love to have you, or stick around here for the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll find out what Steve has next. It's WGN.